Now, why is it that we have that special someone in our lives? So special, in fact, that we want to stay with them for the whole of our lives rather than just go off and go out with multiple people. Some people do, of course, but on the whole, that's not the case. What's going on biologically is what we're asking to make us monogamous. Well, Professor Larry Young is from the Yerkes National Primate Research Centre at Emory University over in the States, and he's looking at the molecules that mediate this monogamy.
Well, my research is really trying to understand the social brain, what makes us want to engage in social interactions and form social relationships. And the way that I've been going about doing that is by studying these interesting little rodents called prairie voles. Now, prairie voles look somewhat like a hamster. They're from the Midwestern United States. And what makes them so interesting is that, like people, they are monogamous. They form bonds between their partners. Now, you may think that that's not so strange, but in fact, in the animal world, only about 5% of species form any kind of relationship whatsoever with their partner. And so we do experiments to try to understand what is the chemistry or the genetics that is underlying their ability to form these lifelong bonds with the partners.
What do you think the advantage to something like the prairie voles you're studying is to forming a monogamous bond? Because the fact that nature does it so rarely, as you point out, suggests that it could be disadvantageous under certain circumstances.
Right. I think under most circumstances, it probably is, at least for most mammals, disadvantageous for them to form the bonds. Because after all, if you're a male, in most cases, you would think that your best strategy would be to mate with as many females as you possibly can. But there may be certain types of environments, like where the prairie vole lives, where there are certain predators around. And if you're a male and you mate with females but don't help them take care of the offspring, and the female has to leave the babies in the nest every day while she forages, maybe all of your babies are going to get eaten.
And when you study the brains of these animals, because presumably this is a behavioral thing, choosing to be monogamous, what do you actually find?
Well, we found that in the prairie voles, there's a molecule called oxytocin. This is a protein hormone that most of us know about because of its role in initiating labor, childbirth, and also lactation. Well, this same molecule is known to be responsible for causing mothers to bond with their babies. It's also involved in the female bonding with the male. We know this because we can take a female prairie vole and place her in the cage with a male and don't let them mate, so they're not mating partners. But if we infuse a little bit of oxytocin into her brain, she will instantly bond with that male. We can also do the converse experiment where we block the oxytocin and let her mate with a male, and she will never bond with that male. Now, in males, it's a different molecule called vasopressin. It's also a protein hormone. It's really interesting that you can have a single molecule like this that plays such an important role in the ability to bond.
Some people have suggested that the bonding process, as you yourself hinted at just now, is the same thing between, say, two adult humans as you get between a mother and her baby. And it's just that the love idea, the two people getting together, it's exploiting the same neurochemistry as when a mother bonds with her baby.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's a very interesting point. And in all mammal species, you have this circuitry in the brain that allows the mother to bond with their baby and take care of the baby. That's an absolutely essential kind of behavior. Oxytocin is released when she gives birth and when she is nursing her babies. Well, oxytocin is also released in animals mate. And so it seems that what happens on the occasion when evolution prefers the monogamy kind of behavior, that those circuitries get tweaked a little bit so that now the bond is not towards the baby, but in addition, towards the male partner.
So having sex does actually drive a stronger bond, establish trust between a male and a female, and that could be part of the role of this hormone system to make people who are going to have offspring bond together so they'll take care of that offspring.
We believe that to be true. In fact, we know that oxytocin is involved in that. And it's interesting that you used the word trust, because there have been some studies in humans now to ask, does this hormone really affect human behavior and human thinking? And the studies are pretty convincing that, in fact, it does. There was one study that showed that if you inhaled oxytocin, you'd trust other people more. You can actually infer their emotions better by just looking at their facial expressions. So it seems that oxytocin is sort of tuning us into the social world around us.
You mentioned that in females it's the oxytocin playing the big role, and in males there's a different molecule, arginine vasopressin. Why is there that dichotomy? And do the two hormones have the same effect in the opposite sex? They're just used differently.
Arginine vasopressin is a sexually dimorphic molecule, which means that males have much more of this than females. And if you look across the animal kingdom, you'll find that vasopressin tends to do the behaviors that are sort of the macho behaviors of that species. So in some species, it increases aggression, it increases territorial behavior. So whatever the males of that species typically do, that's what vasopressin controls. And so it seems when monogamy evolved in this species, it was tweaked a little bit so that this same hormone that controls macho behavior now controls this bonding behavior.
And if we look at people that do seem to have a problem with a roving eye, they can't keep their hands off anyone of the opposite sex, do they have a problem with that hormone system then?
Well, we don't know that for sure. You know, we're just at the very beginning of doing human studies. But there has been an interesting study that came out that does suggest that the vasopressin receptor, which is the protein that responds to vasopressin very much like a key in a lock system, and there are variations in that gene. And we found in voles that if you have a certain variation of that receptor, you are much less likely to form an attachment with a female than if you had other variations. Well, a Swedish group has now done a very similar study in humans and found that individuals who have two copies of one particular variant of the vasopressin receptor gene are twice as likely to report that they have crisis in their relationship in the past year, or twice as likely never even to get married in the first place, to remain in a live-in relationship but not commit to marriage. So it seems very possible that this system may, in fact, have some impact on our own ability to form relationships and the kind of relationships that we form.
It's quite scary when you hear that, isn't it, to think that there are aspects of your genetics that determine whether or not you're going to be faithful to your partner. That was Larry Young. He's at the Yerkes Primate Research Center over in America, and he was explaining there how different hormones can keep us faithful, but why some people are genetically predisposed not to be.